some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a procedural favorite.
And this week we are talking about Dead Cells, which is a roguelike platformer developed and published by Motion Twin for modern systems in 2017.
Yeah. And this is going to be a little bit different. As people who are listening to this know, by the time you hear this, you're like, hey, Sekiro was out too. You guys did that thing about Sekiro and stuff. And we realized that too.
Yeah.
So the original idea, because the timing was super awkward with Sekiro's release. We had one episode to fill before that came out. It actually comes out as the time of recording this comes out tonight. If you pre-ordered it. So we want to hit the ground running with that. So, and just kind of a coincidence with how Dead Cells is as a game, this is going to be a little bit different than the episodes we usually do. This is kind of an overview, kind of review of the game, as opposed to a deep dive, like full exploration of Dead Cells.
Right. And that
for
is
a lot of reasons.
For a lot of reasons. And that is part of the remit for Rekindled. You know, when we talked about in that initial episode, the episode zero or whatever, that like not everything is going to snap to the format. This is one of those cases.
Yep, totally. So like, as opposed to trying to dark mouse this, you know, and give it the same kind of treatment. This is just kind of an overview of a game that has a little bit of Souls DNA and is worth talking about in its own right, but without going absolutely deep on. And part of the reason why it is hard to go absolutely deep on is because this is a roguelike. And that there is a kind of perpetual unlock grind that happens in it. So, you know, I got up to the end boss of this game like four or five times. I can't quite beat him. But I put in enough hours to where it's like, well, I pretty much, you know, I totally get it. Like, I don't feel like this game has other surprises for me. However, to actually like beat it and unlock everything is another hundreds of hours, really, it feels like.
Right.
You know, to go through and do all the boss cells and all of that jazz. So like, you know, when can you say you have completed a game?
Like especially a roguelike game. Like this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's a complicated question. There isn't like an end credits thing. I almost beat the boss. So I feel, and I would have, I didn't choose not to. I just, you know, I got that far and it was like, okay, like I get it, Dead Cells.
You know, it just, no work can be completely perfect. Otherwise it's an affront to God. So I'm going to throw this one.
Exactly.
The king can live for now.
Yeah. We don't need God to toss a limited run games, physical copy of Dead Cells for the Switch into the pit of fucking hell.
No,
you know?
No,
we don't need that. They don't deserve that. So the developer calls this a Roguevania. So it's like a rogue Castlevania. The roguelike elements are that it has this permanent loop, permadeath loop, a bunch of randomization, this slow unlocking system where you unlock different possibilities, similar to like an Isaac. And the combat is similar to a much faster paced kind of Castlevania game.
Yeah, like it feels a lot to me like some of the like DS Castlevania games. There's a little bit of early Castlevania to it.
Yeah. I think to me, this is like 1,000 times faster than any Castlevania side scrolling Castlevania game. Like you have no, Castlevania games, even the DS ones that are a little bit more, loose than the early ones. Like even the Symphony of the Night, Igaravanias, like do not have a sense of mastery and flow to combat at all. Like they're still stiff.
Yes.
You know, this is not stiff. This is like much more, you know, like kind of athletic and dexterous and such.
Yes.
In your movements.
And intentionally so. Like there is an accelerator kind of system built into this. And the sense of flow is real. Like that part of it's very good.
Oh, yeah. Super cool.
Yeah.
So why is this on Bonfireside Chat?
Yeah. Well, what does this have to do with Dark Souls? Come on. I did a Google search for Dead Cells and Dark Souls, what I found was a bunch of reviews and kind of pre-release coverage of the game making that comparison, and then a couple of like message board topics with people saying, why is everybody comparing this to Dark Souls? And then airing their grievances about Dark Souls. It was very funny. I couldn't find anything from the actual developer drawing a connection between the two of them. However, there is obvious Souls DNA in this. There's even like a Dark Souls call out in it. Homage. Call out makes it sound little, confrontational.
Little jokey reference.
Yes.
So the Dark Souls-ness of this, there's a little bit of tone and stuff, even though the tone of this is like something that is different than what it purports to be initially.
Yeah, it's a weirdly we'll funny talk game. About.
I think it's a weird game that tries to be funny.
That's what I mean.
I think the sense of humor in this is really annoying. It's got that. It's got a dodge roll and a parry. There is actually a stamina system, but it's kind of invisible. Like there is a cooldown between your different things you can do.
Yeah.
And some of the flow of combat feels very Dark Souls-esque, specifically in some of the bosses. The first boss feels like a Salt and Sanctuary boss to me. Like, actually, all three of the bosses feel very Salt and Sanctuary to me, which is side-scrolling Souls. But that parry and dodge roll, the kind of ways the different weapons are viable and suggest like different builds. You know, the heavy weapon slow, light weapon fast. Way that kind of plays into Souls. All that stuff feels very Dark Souls.
Yes.
To me. There's an Estus system.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I forgot to write about that, but that is totally a thing. Additionally, kind of like the narrative structure a little bit is like Dark Souls insofar as, well, A, you are in a ruined land with a corrupt leader who is trying to clamp down on a plague.
Stop a curse.
Yeah, to stop a curse. Right. Additionally, you get a lot of detail just in little sentences in your loading screens. You have very elliptical interactions with NPCs throughout the area, just kind of getting little bits of factual information and a lot of tonal information.
Even down to the names of things, like the names of areas feel very Dark Souls to me. So it's not, as far as things we've done that have a connection, this is one of the looser connections, I think. But it's there a little bit, like maybe like a hair less than Momodora 4.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But I get the reason why it might seem even more different is because they add a lot of things. Like Momodora 4 was still a semi-linear open world exploration game with some options and how you tackle things. Mm-hmm. This, by having that roguelike structure, and adding all these roguelike elements in this unlock path and stuff, it kind of dilutes the formula.
Yes.
And feels a little less Souls than maybe you might expect.
Mm-hmm. Because Souls, something that I value a lot in Souls is the sense of, progressive mastery of a known space, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And this has the same. So, we'll get into it when we talk about this. But so it's a little Soulsy. As far as like a game goes, it's really interesting to me. This one, like, a billion awards.
Oh, people love it.
Last year. Yeah, people absolutely love it. I played this when I hurt my shoulder. This Iconoclast and Into the Breach were like the three Switch games I played a lot when I was like in bed for 2 weeks. And like, I played 20 hours of it and I was like, this is awesome. Like, I love this. This is very fun. And then just like came across that. And then that was just started feeling repetitious to like kind of go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking at like the amount of unlocks it wanted me to do, and it started taking more and more cells to unlock it. And I was like, "Oh, actually, this is a hateful grindy slog." And then like immediately, like I hit peak cells, and immediately kind of turned around on it. I think this game is good, but like not. It would need tons of work to be great.
Yeah,
like it is a good game that presents really well initially, and I can understand why it got all these accolades and really like good reviews. And kind of the longer you stick with it, the worse it gets. It eventually just becomes like, all right, all right.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And for me, a lot of that issue comes with the fact that like in your hands and in the moment, there's a lot of stuff in this that feels tremendous. Right. Especially when it gets down to like making choices about which items you're going to pick up and, kind of understanding and crafting and, designing the style of play that you want to pursue. Right. And adapting to that, like all of those individual things are fucking stellar. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just I just desperately wish that it didn't have this structure. right?
Yep.
Like what I want what I want, and it doesn't have to be big, but what I want is, you know, a linear adventure that has this, with the roguelike mode being an extra that's attached to it. Like, give me canonical Dead Cells, Dead Cells, and then, you know, leave this stuff, the big wide open part for people who want to engage with it, because I'd probably do it a little, but not as, mm-hmm. I wouldn't enjoy it as much as like the finite fixed version of it.
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of Chalice Dungeons and the kind of spirited defenses we hear of Chalice Dungeons.
Ooh.
Where people are like, in a less damning way, because it doesn't have Bloodborne attached to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Chalice Dungeons are worse because they're attached to Bloodborne.
Right.
This is when people defend Chalice Dungeons to me. Sometimes they say like, oh, you can see weird stuff, and like, I've watched those YouTubes, it's not that weird.
Yeah,
like, you know, these things that you're seeing are super weird, it's just a different room layout you haven't seen before, but compared to anything in the game, it's actually very bland. Or like, a boss is hanging out outside of a boss arena, uh-huh. which is cool,
right?
But is it worth like dozens and dozens of dives into samey hallways to get there? I would say no.
Mm-hmm.
But the more common defense of Chalice Dungeons I see is like, it just feels so good controlling my character in Bloodborne that just kind of bespoke combat challenges, or not bespoke, randomized combat challenges are good.
Right.
You know, because it just feels good to move the Bloodborne guy around.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is to me. Like, it feels really good to move the Dead Cell guy around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just running through these levels, kind of parkouring, like speedrunning them, setting up these like really, really awesome combos, executing, you know, fighting three or four guys at once and not getting hit, like, feels astounding. Like, mm-hmm. it's really, really good. And the value of that is 20 hours. To me,
right?
You know, and then at some point, like, all of these dumb dead ends, the fact that like these levels are not designed, like, I hate procedural generation in levels, like,
right?
Even, you know, Isaac, which is one of my favorite games of all time, which is procedurally generated, the level layout stuff, you're never like, this is a well laid out level,
right?
Like, that never happens in any mm-hmm. game where they have procedurally generated levels. Like, I'm never like, this is good level design,
right?
Never happens for me. And it happens here too, where like, because it is randomly generated, you get a lot of like nonsense dead ends. You get a lot of just kind of like weird little cul-de-sacs with an enemy, but nothing else.
Right, right.
You know, stuff like that.
And they have a system to paper.
Good.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good. They've got a system to paper over it with those, teleporters that you can do that seem to be laid out every 10 yards or so. Which is like, oh yeah, we know that there's going to be a lot of like just bullshit long hallways that end in nothing. So we're going to make it so you don't have to backtrack through them, which is kind,
which is
but
cool.
It also
like,
shows that they know there was a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the alternative to that is me having to backtrack, and that would suck.
Right.
But the better alternative to that is just design a fucking level. Like, I mean, I understand that's not easy, but I'm just saying I would have liked this much more as a traditional Metroidvania too. It would have been incredible. Yeah. Like, an action Metroidvania with this, and like more than four bosses and more than like five levels or what have you,
mm-hmm.
That just like were set up, you know, like, this could have been the Sultan Sanctuary killer to me.
Yeah.
Like, very much, even though it's not as Soulsy in the DNA, it just feels so much better,
mm-hmm.
you know, to move around in that game. Like, you know, and it just, the randomness of this at no point to me serves it.
Yeah.
Like, they just introduced, like, one of the things that we should say as a disclaimer as recording this is, we're recording this after one really big patch called the Pimp My Patch update or whatever, just a little preview of the sense of humor we're working with in this game.
Right.
And then before the big free DLC that introduces new biomes and a boss and stuff like that. So we understand that we're kind of taking a snapshot. We're recording this in mid-March 2019. Yes. But that last patch introduced, if you beat the game once, you get custom mode where you can just kind of choose a loadout
mm-hmm.
when you start the game. And that sounds way more appealing to me.
Yeah.
Like, everything that's random about this, I don't want. Like, none of the random elements are adding to my enjoyment of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
And it's slippery to like, slippery to explain exactly how, right? Because each biome, it feels like it's put together by roughly the same rules, you know? So you get kind of the downside of both approaches with that. With a bespoke level, the things always feel the same because they are actually the same. The upside of that would be like, oh, I know this and I master it. With the random stuff, if everything feels the same and I'm not really like, I have no capacity to say, oh, like, this platform is here in a different place than it was before, that makes very little difference. Like, you're not getting the upside of like a dramatic change in the way a given run is going to go, specifically with the geometry and the enemy layout.
It never feels appreciably different. Like, there's no there's no way to feel like surprised by it, really. Like, I never go into a new area of Dead Cells and go like, whoa, that's new. You know, unless it's a totally new biome. And the game that has like a limited number of times it can show you that. You know, the first time you get to a biome, you get some new enemies and it's like, whoa. But once you know that biome, you just know that biome. It doesn't matter what the level layout does.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's random or bespoke, it's always the same. You know? So it ends up like the experience of playing this is really interesting because it ends up being like playing most of a short game over and over and over that's not really appreciably different.
Right.
Like, you might get different weapons and choose a different build.
That's the bigger, that's the bigger change. Random, you know, the biggest random effect run to run is what drops, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Even then though, I found, and this runs up a little bit against like this most of the Pimp My Patch update or whatever, Pimp My Update or whatever it's called patch. Adjusted the difficulty and reduced it a little bit. Up until that point, where I'd spent the lion's share of my time playing the game, you know, I experimented with different builds until I found one that felt the most viable, and then would hunt for that one because it was the one I was able to make the most progress in.
Yes.
And I am still like kind of progress driven in video games. Like, I like games with an ending. I don't want to just kind of hang out in the sandbox and do chalice dungeons with no, you know, I want to see the moon presence come down. You know, I want to climax the story and the my character and have some kind of, you know, I'm not into edging, you know,
right?
Like, you know, it feels like the game wants you to edge, you know, and I don't want to edge. You know?
Yeah. So this is going to run up into something that I think is going to be a little bit of a theme in Bonfire Side Chat Rekindled, especially as we move beyond Sekiro. And get into more of these Souls likes that have released in the intervening time, right? Post Dark Souls 3, which is a number of them are roguelike, right? You know, thinking of two that are just kind of not top of mind, but at least I can remember them, like perspective things for the show, both Hades and Below. You know, things that we're looking at doing for this. Those are roguelike, and I think that there's going to be a little bit of a similar structure problem with those. And I'm kind of curious because what it seems to me is that when Dark Souls came out, there was an awful lot of comparison to roguelike, specifically because you die and drop something, even though, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, there's nothing really that roguelike about Dark Souls or the Souls games themselves to me, outside of the chalice dungeons.
Like, every once in a while, someone will say Dark Souls has permadeath. And I'm like, what? Did you not pay attention during the cutscene of that? Like, you lose one of your resources. You keep everything else when you die, and you can't, there's not a lose state for Dark Souls.
Yeah. But like, but part of the whole thing about Dark Souls is that death kind of doesn't matter.
It's like, not only does it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter on any axis. It doesn't matter to the player. It also doesn't matter in the fiction.
Right.
You know, it is always the remit of these games that it doesn't exist, you know, and that's such a, so these two things that are huge parts of rogue likes, are Dark Souls does the opposite, which, like, one of which is death mattering. Like, in rogue likes, generally death matters a lot. And in rogue likes, level design doesn't matter. And in Dark Souls, level design matters a lot.
Yeah.
So they're actually, like, it's interesting that people have kind of surgically removed some combat values from Dark Souls and put that into things. And I get it, because a lot of times these are indie games, and I don't know this to be true. And if I'm wrong, like, I don't mean a shade for this, because I like roguelikes quite a bit, actually. But I think that doing kind of procedurally generated roguelike levels is more cost effective.
I can see that.
I think that I can see that being cheaper. I don't know that that's true, but I can see it. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't, and again, I'm not throwing any shade on anybody, because I like those types of games quite a bit. They're a little weird when they run up against Souls, though.
Yes.
For me, or Souls like kind of options.
Yeah, there's a dissonance there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get into describe some more things about the game, and then kind of we can just kind of again say our general thoughts on it at the end.
Yeah.
And we can kind of talk about those biomes and bosses and builds and stuff like that without being exhaustive. Because even though, you know, I, again, play this a lot. I unlocked a lot of items. You get this little thing that shows you what you've unlocked, and it's still maybe a fourth of the things. And I'm at, you know, at 20 hours, you know, so I'm unlocking things exceedingly slowly.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things to unlock in this.
Yeah. So we can start with the story. Are you good with that?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Story, premise, and all of that. So it's kind of weird. Like, you play as a very strange beast. You're this blob of cells that drops out of the sewer pipe and kind of assumes control of this beheaded prisoner, right? Just kind of plops up there on the neck, puts on a helmet, and then you're off to the races.
Yep. And this is kind of your in-the-fiction reason why you can die and come back.
Yes.
Because when this body you possess dies, you just crawl back to the prison to find another fresh body and take over that one and make another go of it. So that is the reason why we have this roguelike structure. Mm-hmm. There is no information about this blob really online. Like, I spent some time looking in the wiki because one of the big kind of surprises of this game when I was playing it was I was expecting it to, because it kind of carries forth like the fonts and tone a little bit of Dark Souls initially, like kind of presents that. I was expecting it to have kind of similar storytelling beats and similar kind of feel to the narrative, and it kind of doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
The narrative itself, other than these basic things, like you are a blob of cells, there's a disease on this island kingdom called the malaise, and the king went paranoid and you're heading to go kill the king. Other than those things, it is really goofy and there's nothing there.
Right.
Like, there are a couple little lore bits when you look at these bosses, we can find out about who they were before they became bosses.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like silly.
Yes.
Like they're silly, or it's one sentence that's serious. Like, it feels like there's kind of two different competing tones in the lore and story stuff to me.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. And like we said before, the attempts at humor don't always kind of land. Like your main character, you know, the whatever his name, I think.
The blob of protoplasm.
Yeah, the blob of protoplasm. Yeah. I think I looked on TV Tropes and it's like, oh, the fan nickname for him is Blobs Pierre. Like Rose Pierre. He's kind of a selfish doofus. More so than anything. And everybody else is just real kind of like dismissive of you.
It's really straight. Like, yeah, that's it, like, oh, this headless guy walked up and stuff.
Yeah, you know? It clangs. It clangs for me. So again, doing a little bit more looking on this, apparently the blob is like the decomposed remains of the king's head. The blob is the king. When you go at the end and you land the final blow on the king who's in his throne after you beat the boss, everything explodes. That's the king's body. You are his consciousness.
So the king doesn't do anything. Like, I watched the ending of this. The king doesn't do anything when you kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you blow up and he blows up and then the game just starts over.
Right.
In the wikis I saw, I did not see that the blob was the king's consciousness.
Yeah.
The king's a real dipshit then. Like, why is the king like a real, you know, El Barto character?
might be like a Habsburg kind of thing. Maybe, you know, maybe there wasn't a real diverse gene pool. In this real family.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so Eon Shealy, like, drawing these portraits of the Dead Souls kings, you know?
Yeah. And apparently, like, another thing that contributes to this is the fact that, like, the boss of the clock tower is this lady who has tried to contain the malaise onto this island by putting everything into a time loop, is my understanding as well.
Yeah, she's Groundhog Day-ing it.
Yes.
There's definitely like a little lore note about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, yeah, it's just kind of weird. Like, when we say that the main character is goofy, like, you'll find like a prison cell where there'll be an NPC through it, and the NPC, like, they'll be slowly drowning. Like, you're knee deep in water, and the water's coming through, and they're like, the water's rising up, like, I'm very scared. And then you like kick the door, and then you do like a real exaggerated Jim Halpert shrug at the camera. Like, the headless in this is very Jim Halpert.
Yeah.
It's a really weird choice, and it doesn't make me laugh ever. Like, I haven't laughed at anything in this game.
Yeah.
And it mostly just like pulls me out of it. And I don't know why. I guess like the just like the sense of humor like that the devs have, you know, cause it, you know, I'm like the Pimp My Game update or whatever.
Yeah.
Makes me think of that. It's just like, boy, like I just didn't expect that, and it's not resonating with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like funny games. It just it doesn't. You know, I even like the funny games remake.
It was fine. I wish you had a sense of humor, Gary.
Yeah, it's a shame that I don't. Yeah. You know, I just you know, from the man who disliked jazz punk comes not thinking Dead Cells is funny.
Oh Jesus!
But yeah, that's pretty much the story. You don't really need it.
Nope.
You just kind of move forward through biomes, but it's pretty backseated.
Yeah, and like the individual stages are fine. Like there's a fishing village that you know is all rotted because the Malays got into the water and stuff like that. But most of it's you know prisons and dungeons and you know Castlevania shit, right?
Very Castlevania shit.
Yeah.
The majority you're not really engaging with the story. The majority of the time you're at this game, you're engaging with this loop. Mm-hmm. Every run you start in this dungeon, it's called the Prisoner's Quarters, and it's kind of this, there's a tutorial when you first start the game
right.
that you do. This is kind of the, you know, the main game after that tutorial. And you kind of go through the stage. There are multiple paths you can go through the stage. There are some Metroid-esque power-ups that will allow you to open up these paths.
Yeah, and those you get the permanent. Ability, yeah.
Those permanently unlock. So you get the ability to create ladders at certain places. You get the ability to scale walls. You get the ability to ground pound through floors. That allows you to access alternate stages.
Right.
They all end up at the same place. You know, it's just kind of which paths you want to take along the way.
Yeah. And I think that part of the motivation for that is, you know, depending on what you get at the start, you know, like the individual levels, you may be making a decision like, oh, I'd rather go to the toxic sewers than the Promenade of the Condemned. Just because of my build, right? Things like that. Either that, or you're going to choose another path because different levels have different unlocks, like different blueprints
I think
you can get.
Yeah, I think it's very much the second one.
Yes.
Like the levels don't feel appreciably like this level is better for this sort of build to me.
Mm-hmm.
Something about like the level of push in on the camera and the types of enemies you fight means that like the same strategies seem pretty, like these are just collections of platforms.
Yes.
You know, more than anything. So like, it's not like a different build means a different way of approaching this collection of platforms. I think it just means like, if I go to the sewer, I can fight conjunctivitis, mm-hmm. which is a boss named conjunctivitis. So again,
conjunctivius.
Oh, conjunctivius.
Yeah.
It's meant to invoke
conjunctivitis. Yes.
Yeah. Conjunctivius, you know, because you get an unlock for killing. Conjunctivius.
Yes.
You know, so you're hunting down that unlock.
Mm-hmm.
You kill enemies, you get gold and you get cells. Sometimes cells are your unlock currency. And you get between levels, and between levels there is it's like a little town almost.
Yeah, yeah.
You spend cells, and this unlocks things. You know, we'll talk about this a little bit more, but like generally it unlocks things that you can possibly run into.
Right.
In the game, you can upgrade your equipment and you can get permanent benefits. And we'll talk about those later.
Yes. But the idea is you need to spend all of your cells. And, you know, if you like partially purchase something, that balance remains. Right. So, you know,
yes.
if it's 100 cells to permanently give yourself another Estus flask. And you only have 15, you put 15 in and then you will pay off the rest of the balance later. So this is a little wandering town with an extremely generous will call policy or layaway policy.
Yeah, exactly. You get this Estus on layaway. as we mentioned, you do have an Estus. You start with just one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can increase that. That replenishes at the end of every level.
If you choose. I like that. Like you walk up to an alembic and you can choose to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you don't want to. And then we'll talk about boss cells later. Mm-hmm. You can make that more difficult if you like. Not all of these biomes end with a boss.
Right.
You know, sometimes you'll just get a little between thing. And the bosses are on their own bespoke stage. So you always get a town before the boss and after the boss,
mm-hmm.
Which is really nice.
Generous, yeah.
Yeah. Each biome has a rune, which are those things, those Castlevania or Metroid abilities that allow you to explore.
Mm-hmm.
It's permanent unlocks.
Yes. And so when you get to a new biome, what you want to do is go and look for that rune. Oftentimes there's like a little NPC that kind of points you to it. There's like a little story bit, or I guess a little bit of shtick that's done.
yeah, a little sketch.
Yeah.
like a college improv troupe asks for a suggestion for a rune and does a little play.
Yep.
About it. Those things, just in general, the runes are pretty disappointing to me because they really only function as keys.
Yes.
I wanted them to have combat utility or be fun in their own right, and they're not.
Right.
You know, the wall climbing one seems like it would be useful about getting around, but I can, you know, the time I use that during a combat situation, I can count on like pretty much one hand.
Yeah.
And that's the only one that has any utility whatsoever.
Yeah. And that's a shame because like that is a major hallmark of a castle or of a Metroidvania, right? Is, you know, like the best ones of those, there's integration between those systems, you know?
Yeah.
Picking something up makes both of them better.
Yep. Yeah. And that's why I would have liked to have seen like, oh, the freeze beam helps exploring, but it also helps combat.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So it may as well be Doom. Like you're picking up the red key.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to go through this. You know, when you die, you lose your money. You get gold, off of these, and there are like little shops within the stages. That's a little bit like Spelunky or any number of other roguelikes that this learns from. And you also drop that. You can keep a little bit of it when you die. That's an upgrade that you can get. Although I never really wanted for money. Honestly, like that was it didn't factor in too much for me.
Like usually by the time, I mean, like I would upgrading equipment is cheap and is real, and rerolling the modifiers and equipment is relatively cheap early on. It gets more expensive the more you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would more often get attached to a weapon. And then when you beat a boss, you get a unique weapon. Or there are curse chests, which we'll talk about, which gives you a really good weapon. And I never really, the very high priced items where I'd want a lot of money were all related to buying things that tended to be worse than what I already had.
Yes.
You know, so I didn't really want for money either. I put in, you know, points in upgrading how much gold you can keep, thinking it was going to be important.
Yeah.
And it was not. I would have much preferred like cells you can keep.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, but like if you could keep, you know, buy an upgrade that lets you keep 25% of the cells you have when you died, just to give you a little boost, might make that grind a little bit easier.
Yeah, accelerate.
So we talked about chests. You know, they're just kind of randomly, they give you a good item. Curse chests are really interesting in this. You pick them up and they give you an incredible item. And then you have to kill a certain number of enemies, but you die in one hit until you kill that certain number of enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually kind of the most fun I have with the game, are these very tense, like strategic approaches through a section of level, trying to rack up that kill count.
Oh yeah. I love it.
To make my curse wear off. I love those too. Like curse chest. I'm always into it. And they're kind of mimics. They smile at you and they're,
they're masochists. They're goofs. They're masochists. Like, come on, hit me harder.
Yeah, exactly. You know, stick your fist in my mouth. I don't need it. You know, they're pretty horny. Those are great. So you fight those bosses, you get a good item when you kill a boss as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you get an unlock again. Like a lot of these things have unlocks associated with them. Enemies will drop unlocks. But it's a random chance. I know that the late game grind of this, it's kind of annoying. Like, you know, you can be farming an enemy trying to get their unlock.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get that. And these scrolls that come up that end up being things that can show up in the game world.
Yes.
So they can show up either in the, you know, you can unlock a thing that gives you a random weapon on start, which is an early thing you should get. And then things that can show up in shops.
Yes.
So you're hunting down these scrolls.
Something that's really frustrating about this, I really wish that there was a way to remove items from your pool. Because like you put the cells in to get something that you think looks okay, then it gets there and they're like, oh no,
well, this is actually garbage.
This could have been something else that was like way better. Like I would have like that, like make that a use for gold. You know,
that's actually a really big good point about how about this game that can be a little bit annoying to me, is that like a surprising number of just items and weapons and stuff you can get in this game are just bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm sure there's a play style that
like,
exactly. What am I supposed to do with this? You know, like I'm sure there's a play style that uses the sandals,
yeah,
you know, for the whole game, but I don't feel good having wasted opportunity on it.
Right. You know? Right. And the sandals are not expensive. In fact, I think they're kind of a trap. They're like 5 cells to unlock and it gives you like it advertises itself as like a quick attack that you can deploy. No, they're fucking worthless and they're always going to be there if you buy them. And I wish that I hadn't been goaded into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the things are like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a surprising number of them are just kind of bad. And like, you know, people who are listening to this who play this game a lot are going to say, like, hey, actually you can build around this stuff. Oh, mm-hmm. like, you don't like the boomerang? The boomerang's actually amazing.
Oh, and yeah, like, yeah. You can also kill Capra by throwing poop over the wall.
Yeah, exactly. You can throw Capra by, you know, oh, just use a kukri. Right. You know, like, yes, there's a way to make this stuff work, but it is less intuitive and more kind of obnoxious, I guess, than I was happy with, you know?
Yeah.
Is more the issue. So, and the fact that, again, it pollutes the pool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dislike.
Dislike. Yeah. We can talk about those weapons and just kind of the item and equipment as well, because like you start out with a rusty sword and then you get a choice between a bow and a shield. After I tried the shield once, I never went with it again.
I end up using a lot because you can parry with it.
Yeah.
So like that was how I got through bosses a lot of the times. Like one of the things I like about the game is almost everything is parryable, mm-hmm. Including like ranged attacks and bombs and stuff, and the parry timing is really intuitive to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I always use shields because of that.
Yeah. Maybe I could have practiced with it a little bit more and got that. But just to me, the ability to take things out at a distance was always preferable. The ammo system in this is actually really interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. We'll talk about that. Like so when you hit, you have a limited number of ammo, which only comes back after you kill enemies.
Right.
With it. So you can run out of bullets if you haven't killed anything. Then you have to actually get up there and kill the guy to get your bullets back. Mm-hmm. Get your arrows back.
Yeah. Sound like you were going to say something when I was talking about the bow and the shield.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is kind of going into a bigger problem with this, but it's worth talking about. Is that when you say, like, being able to take things out at range, for me, that was entirely obviated by traps. And like traps are actually a big kind of issue with this game, I think.
Okay.
So like, you have, four things you can do. You have two weapons that's totally customizable, like two primary weapons that can be either a spell or a bow or a melee weapon or a shield. And then you have shoulder buttons, and these can either be, there's a couple like consumables.
Yeah.
There's like an extra healing item, grenades, but traps are the big one. And these only work when they're like within a certain distance of you, but the distance is really generous, like half the screen.
Yeah.
And the cooldowns on them are very short. I think the longest cooldown I've seen on a trap is like 8 seconds.
Yeah.
So you can deploy these again. And something that I think is a big problem in this game is that regardless of whether it's the most fun way to play, when you're in a new biome, the optimal way to play is to throw traps on top of a platform where the enemy is and then make yourself on a different Z-axis so they can't hit you.
And then wait.
And just let your traps kill them.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's boring. It's not, you know, yes, it's kind of my fault for playing that way, but it ties into one of the bigger problems with this is that for like a roguelike, the loop in this game is very long.
Yes.
You know, getting to the end boss of this takes more than north of an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so when I get to that last level and I'm like, boy, I'd really like to actually make some progress in the game, I don't want to lose. That encourages
extremely conservative play. Degenerate.
Yeah.
degenerate yes. conservative play. Yeah.
Yes. So like, and that traps are what do that. Like the traps are incredibly OP. They recharge incredibly quickly. There's no reason other than there's no extrinsic reason not to play that way.
Right.
There's an intrinsic reason is that it's less fun, but there's nothing in the game that suggests that you should not just be throwing traps onto a platform and then hiding out on a ladder and letting your traps take care of it.
Yeah. They make it possible, you know? And they kind of encourage it because you're going to run into a lot of traps and they all function roughly the same, just with different kind of like ranges and shooting trajectories and things like that. The majority of the consumables that you find are going to be traps. So it feels like, and is a really major system within the game. And I found that
and with the short cooldowns too, like they want you to use them and frequently.
Yeah. And most of my successful runs were ones where I, you know, successful for me, which was, you know, getting to the clock tower or something like that. You know, like most of those were ones where I leaned very, very heavily. I just got two of the double crossbow matics or whatever, and then just kind of spam them.
Yep.
You know,
same. And like, and,
on one hand, like, it's like, you know, like there is a little bit of joy to like getting a combination of traps and damage over time effects on your weapons, be it in the bow or be it in your guns swords, which are guns for your hands.
But close range gun.
Yes. Yeah. So like there's a little bit of joy into stacking damage over time on an enemy and throwing the traps down, or having like those little ads that come, like, you know, there are some items that I got where just like, when you kill somebody, a bunch of bloodthirsty slugs, spawn and follow you around and do damage for you. Like there's a certain amount of joy to like exploiting the game and stacking all that stuff up on top of each other to make it so enemies basically die on their own, you know, while I stand up and plink them down with arrows or what have you. But that is not necessarily where this game sings, which to me is when you are, you know, comboing and chaining kills and moving really fast and dodging and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's not only is there joy to that too, but there's synergies built in.
Yes.
Into the build system. And that's where like a lot of times, so you have modifiers on your weapons. You can reroll these in the town sections and it will be like, does additional damage to poisoned enemies. And you can set down a trap that says like, does 30% extra damage to poison enemies and releases a poison cloud.
Right.
You know, or you can have one trap, you know, a bow that poisons enemies and a trap that does extra damage, or vice versa.
Right.
And you can kind of synergize with that stuff and make pretty satisfying combinations.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't want to discount that. Like it, you know, like I played a lot of this game.
Yeah.
Like I think this is a fun, almost good, like good, but almost great game, you know, and this is one of those things, like this is actually pretty fun to craft this stuff.
Oh yeah.
It just that degenerate, you know, again, that passive play that comes from the way traps, like, I don't know what the solution is for that. You know, really without like jettisoning the system, I don't want them to have longer cooldowns, but at the same time, like a lot of the solution is make this not a roguelike, so I'm not as scared of dying.
Right.
Like, give me a checkpoint. So it's like, if I get to the castle and I'm like, well, the castle's hard. you know, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I have no interest in doing that because I don't have to, because I'm not so scared of losing everything. You know, I don't want to just like waste that time, you know, and like, you could argue like, oh, you didn't waste it. You put in some cells on the way to unlock some stuff. This game gets so like, once I realized that the item pollution was a thing and I stopped just trying to buy traps and weapons I thought looked bad, I was like, I'm going to go for Estus. And I'm at the one where it takes 400 cells to unlock it. And in any given run, you know, I put about, you know, 80 or 90 or 100. So getting that extra Estus is 4 hours of good runs, 4.5 hours of good runs. Too much. Like, too much to unlock extra Estus. I could unlock a lot of weapons and items I'll never want to use in between there. But this seems like the thing that would most match my play style. You know, so it makes me not want to risk that. So,
yeah,
I think traps are a big problem. And when we were talking about this on Slack, and people who are like, oh, like, I just don't use them that much, or I just don't play that way. You know, I had more success not doing it that way. And like, that's cool. Like, if you don't play it that way,
I
get that. It's undeniably successful and powerful to throw a trap down and then move to a different Z axis.
Yeah.
Like it's good. It's good that you stop yourself from doing it.
If you can do damage to somebody else without them being able to damage you, that is success, right? Yeah, no.
And like, typically, like we talked about before, like I tend to put degenerate play in the wheelhouse of the player. Like I think like, oh, just, you know, don't, you know, if you don't want the Vita Chambers, yeah, don't farm. Like you shouldn't farm. Like it just, if that makes the game worse for you and you don't like it, don't do it. And the thing with this is that the alternative also is not fun to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, you know, the example I always think of is like, people were complaining about in the newest Deus Ex games, like having to do the hacking minigame to read people's emails, and they just felt like they had to. And I was like, you know, like, well, I enjoy doing that, but if you don't enjoy it, don't do it. You know, like, that's fine. Here, though, the alternative is do this degenerate play, or play in a way where I just constantly lose my progress and stuff. Because one of the things about this long loop is that the Hand of the King, the end boss of this game, I fought him like 3 or 4 times now. And that iteration loop to take another crack at it to kind of learn his patterns and stuff is mm-hmm. too long.
Yeah.
Like, I want to learn that boss. And if you put, you know, an hour and 15 minutes of time before I can try, like, it's an hour and 15 minute boss run.
Yeah.
You know, imagine that in like a Souls context.
Oh my God. You know? So we got a Chalice Dungeon comparison and we got an hour and 15 minute boss run.
Imagine having to do the entire Defiled Loron Chalice before being able to fight the boss again. Instead of just having a lantern like right outside the boss door,
right?
You know,
yeah.
It's the systems stack up to work against each other. It's not that degenerate play is, you know, there's no culpability, mm-hmm. you know, for the player choosing it. It's that the game just doesn't provide good options to not doing it.
Right, right.
You know, other than just the intrinsic, like, I enjoy moving this guy around, mm-hmm. which I do, but I want to make progress because video games. Yeah. And I like progress. You know.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Disclosure, I never got to the end boss of the game. Well, I mean, if you want to discard,
take away your gamer card,
then fine. Yeah. That's okay. I played the game for like 10-15 hours, something like that.
It's all super luck. Like, it's very luck based, the runs where I made it to him.
Yeah.
Like, most runs I do, I very consistently get to the timekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. You know, that's a hard boss, but I feel like that's fair and stuff. And I got to him enough times where, or heard it enough times where I feel like I've learned the timekeeper.
She's fun.
Timekeeper's great. But having enough resources after that and being set up to deal with the castle, which, like, this is another thing about that loop. Like, really, a lot of the problems with this is how long the loop is for, like, a roguelike, is that there are these pacing killing elements in certain levels and certain biomes.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Stilted Village and in the final castle, there is a key mechanic. So it's this, you know, big sprawling map. To get to the end boss of the castle, not only do you have to find the end boss, you have to find two keys in two different little corners and fight mini bosses to get to the Hand of the King. And it just takes fucking forever to do that. And, like, I have to have enough strength to, like, not only get there, but also get to the boss or be able to fight the boss at this point. So, like, give me a break with this, you know, should not be doing trap stuff. Like, I'm trying to protect my shot at the King. You know, if you come at the Hand of the King, you best not miss.
Right.
And I may keep missing, you know,
and you know what rarely misses traps.
Yeah. Yeah. Traps never miss. They have AI, they're turrets, you know? So that sucks. The length of the loop sucks. Like, that those pacing killing key sections are, like, really suck, because something we have to talk about is the speed aspect of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this game rewards going through it fast. Ooh. And again, in a system that I think, like, doesn't quite work.
Yeah. So what happens is between stages, and I think I've seen one or two of these, like, within a stage as well.
They used to be in stages.
Okay.
And then the new patch put them between the stages.
Okay. So yeah, the patch kind of happened right in the middle of my play on this. Mm-hmm. So there we go. So now in between each stage, there are doors, like bonus doors that will only open if you've met a certain criteria. One of them is if you have killed a certain number of enemies without being hit. Mm-hmm. And then the other is if you got to that door within a certain amount of time.
Yes.
Right.
So you are meant to, and there's a third one that will open if you have a certain number of boss cells activated.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll talk about boss cells. So you're meant to kind of speed run through this. And what's through these doors is some cells, you know, and some gold and a choice of three things.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple upgrades. We'll talk about upgrades here in a moment.
Yeah.
But it's not nearly commensurate with, like, what you get for exploring the level.
Right. Yeah. So, like, it's almost like an intrinsic encouragement when you get there and the game says, ah, perchance if you had gotten here sooner, this would be open. That, as a gamer, Gary, as a gamer, that mm-hmm. makes me feel
bad.
Yeah,
as a gamer, boy.
As a gamer, that makes me feel bad. Yeah, like,
you want
bad.
A treat.
I want a treat. Yeah. I need a treat.
Like, throw a treat into my mouth.
Yeah.
Like, I am a gamer. I need a treat in my mouth.
I got here as fast as I could, I assure you.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me something worth. And just from, like, a loop perspective, it's inadequate. Yeah. Because the idea being is, like, okay, you've gotten bored with exploring these levels. You just want to get there as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. The reason why I want to get there as fast as I can is because I want to make taking shots at this boss less tedious.
Yes.
But if you're going to say, like, doing this means you are going to have such a decreased sense of efficacy against the boss. Like,
mm-hmm.
the amount of cells and resources you get are, like, anywhere between, like, half and 2/3 of what you would get for fully exploring the level.
That's the thing.
Right. Yeah. It's like you can speed run it, but if you do, you're going to be suckier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, again, that encourages that like methodical, slow paced, like sweeping the level play to get all these level ups, because the levels are randomly designed and they might have a power up in any corner. And those power ups are really significant,
right?
You know, so like, boy, that sucks. You know, like it just feels bad to like speed run for those. Like you can play it and just always speed run, and like you might have more intrinsic fun, but you are not set up for more success and kind of the grander loop of achieving things in the game.
Yeah. You know? And also like just by the numbers, as you get to later biomes, they have different kind of tiers of difficulty in terms of what monsters can show up. So if you are speed running and ending up behind the curve, it's not like your you know, skill at getting through this really, you know, getting through this more quickly will help you kill things that you find later. Like you're still going
It will make it harder.
Yeah, like you're still going to be fighting harder enemies with worse items and with less HP because you've not gotten those power ups.
And when you eventually get to the castle at the end, which you can't really speed run, like all of these things end in a road in a level that you are forced to more fully explore,
right?
Because of this key system. So it feels like if you're speed running, like, and you do get a couple of blueprints for speed running, you know, so like you get some permanent unlocks to do that. But after those unlocks are done, the motivation to do so is like you spend less time, but you're way less powerful, and you're going to get to this level, this very difficult level that you have to kind of explore in full.
Yeah.
At the end with the castle, and it's like just inelegant, you know. It's like,
and I hope that this is coming across, that it's not just like us saying, oh, this isn't for us. Like, these are tensions, these are places where the systems and incentives that the game are putting out feel very much at odds,
where it's tantalizingly close to being for us,
right?
And then not for us. And when I say not for us, I spent, you know, 25 hours on this game total,
right?
So pretty for me, like I feel like I got my money's worth. Like I feel good about having played Dead Cells. It's just the reason why I don't want to play it anymore,
right?
You know, is this stuff. Let's talk about builds and these kind of three colors and how this whole thing works.
Yeah, let's do that. So everything you can pick up, it can be one of three different colors, and those kind of map to kind of different aspects. So it's like brutality, tactics, and survival, I think. Blue, purple, and then green.
And your weapons will scale with these things.
Right.
So like most melee weapons scale with brutality, but not exclusively. Most traps scale with tactics, but not exclusively. And then survival kind of bleeds into both.
Right.
They can be mixed. It can be like a 75% brutality, 25% survival weapon. You go around, the way that you upgrade in this game is you find scrolls that are either things that will give you a choice of all three or a choice of two of those things to upgrade. And they will upgrade. So if you upgrade your brutality, all your brutality based items will get more powerful, and you'll get a certain percentage more hit points. And it's a huge percentage initially.
Oh yeah. It's like 50% more. Yay.
Yeah. It's 40, 50 or 60 initially. And it's like crazy. And then as the game goes on, you get less and less hit points. Or as you choose the same option over and over, you get fewer and fewer hit points. So if you just do pure brutality, your red weapons will be extremely powerful, but you'll not get very many hit points because that first survival choice is still available, which will give you plus 60% to whatever you're at.
Yes.
So this huge buff.
In the extreme, you're making a choice between doing a whole bunch of damage but being very fragile, or spreading all those points out evenly and getting as much of a hit point boost as you can. I think that's a really interesting choice.
Yeah, I love it. Like, I think this is super interesting. It does vary, you know, from run to run. If you have weapons you like, you're going to be like prioritizing those scrolls, making that choice between, hey, do I double down on this concentration or do I try to get some extra survivability is really interesting. You know, I actually really like this.
Yeah.
So, again, though, I want those scrolls. And the way to get those scrolls is combing the level. Go back to our kind of last screed.
Yes.
You know, this is what is the stake, what you're losing if you speed run. So this is really interesting. There's also a system where these colors correspond to upgrades you can get at the end of every level.
Yeah.
You spend your cells on those unlocks. Yeah. You get mutations. And these also, like, to me, feel similar to the weapons, where they vary like wildly in usefulness or utility.
Yeah.
Like, There's one of them that I always take, and again, I don't know if this is a noob trap or whatever, but is the one that gives you plus 50% health and then like food doesn't heal you.
I was real suspicious. I found food
pretty rare in the game.
Yeah,
I didn't find food very often.
Huh.
In the game, so I was like, "Fuck food!" Like, I'll take a pretty big free hit point boost, you know, in exchange for that. But the rest of them do not feel super useful. There's one that recharges your traps faster, but again, your traps recharge so fast anyway.
The brutality ones always seemed pretty worthwhile for me. Like, I always got the combo one that gave you more damage after each kill for a certain amount of time. That felt like it helped me kind of snowball my efficacy kind of along with the speed increases that you get by killing folks. That was pretty good, but there were some of them where it's like, okay, like necromancer or whatever, for each enemy that you kill, you gain like 0.014% back. It's of health back. And it's like,
so if I kill 1,000 enemies in this stage, I'll get my health back.
Yeah.
I can fill up one health bar.
It's like the interest rate on a free checking account.
The banker at the end of the Dead Cells level, if you choose between those things. There's those things. And then there also, as we mentioned, you can, there's also one of the ways that this game is grindy is that you, weapons have, tiers as well, to them. And one of the ways after bosses, you have a special shop where you can spend cells, which just increases the chance of really good weapons showing up.
Yeah.
For things, and these cost astronomical amounts of cells.
1,000 cells, like, for the first
1,000. This is what communicates to me that you are just supposed to make this a perpetual game that you just grind and grind and grind to unlock things.
Yeah,
you know, it is exceedingly grindy as an intended experience. It feels like and then like finally, like I guess boss cells we should talk about. I didn't engage with this, but I read about it. After you beat the game, you get a boss cell. Boss cells are like challenge modifiers you can put on. To get the second boss cell, you have to beat the game with one boss cell on. Right. So like kind of full boss cells is the you know, super challenge mode of this. And these are things like you don't replenish your Estus between stages. Enemies are faster. Enemies do more damage. Just challenge modifiers.
Is there a commensurate benefit on the other side of those, or is it just...
There's no benefit. Okay, they're just challenges you pop up.
Not like a super giant thing. Yeah.
No. Yeah. There's no increased experience. I think that one of them actually, no, I guess that's not true. I think there's one of them that where you get additional cells if you have a combination of them, but they're rare. Like a bunch of them don't have benefits. And the benefit is you beat the game to get the new cell. And when you beat the game with that boss cell, you get new blueprints at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's getting these increased number of unlocks. Again, though, like a lot of the stuff seems like chaff to me. You know, like the trap that is the brain or the tentacles from the ceiling of Half-Life. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, that's clever. I don't think it's very useful, though, when I just have this good old fashioned turret.
Yes. Here.
I don't really need that polluting my space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that might be the major systems. More than anything that talked about.
Yeah. It's pretty close to Dead Cells. Like, it's pretty close to what I have to say on it. Like, there's not a whole lot, you know, describing individual enemies and bosses is a little bit difficult because they just kind of, there's not tons of lore behind them. Again, you know, we said the timekeeper stuck in a Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
Conjunctivius is a corpse that mutated, you know, stuff like that. And then the Hand of the King, the boss, the final boss is worth talking about because it's really a slog, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Even the debuffed version from the patch, you know, just an astronomical amount of hit points, and there are two spike pits at either side of the stage. And one of the big moves for this boss is to charge you off into it. It has very little wind up. It's really hard to dodge.
No.
And then it just takes, you know, a fourth. Like, I had tons of hit points on my most recent run where I got there, and it just takes a huge chunk.
Yeah.
Which sucks. And then at periodic points during the boss fight, the boss becomes invincible and summons in like kind of superpowered regular enemies.
Oh, I hate that move.
To come through.
Yeah,
it's a really obnoxious move. Like, here, stop and play a different boss fight for a little bit. You know, it just really, really tedious fight. Like, you know, very, very, like, tons of particle effects, moves really quickly. It's very hard to learn. And again, you have to put in this ridiculous amount of time every loop you want to give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't insurmountable. I felt like, given enough chances, like, sure, I could beat that boss. But each chance just cost me so much that I stopped wanting to take chances on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I never beat her, but the timekeeper was my favorite of the bosses.
Yeah, Timekeeper is cool.
Yeah. Just because she's real. I mean, like there's an Artorias comparison or Lady Maria, and I can understand that. It's just a real acrobatic kind of fight. Like that really is, you know, it seems like she is meeting you on your terms a little bit, and it's engaging the dodge more than some of the other fights that I saw.
Really fun to parry.
Yeah.
Like all the things you can parry. There's a thing, the Timekeeper has a get over here style scorpion attack.
Mm-hmm.
And when she pulls you over, there's a timing where you can parry the attack she does after that. And that's immensely satisfying.
Nice.
Like, you know, I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me, you know, kind of feeling.
Oh, you did me a favor. Thank you.
Exactly. Like, pretty cool.
Yep.
Those individual fights, again, just kind of speak a little bit to me of this missed opportunity where, like, if that was just a boss fight that I went to after going through a set level, like the Timekeeper's Clock Tower or whatever, that was, like, really designed and had a bunch of bespoke encounters and stuff, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Just fight the Timekeeper once, not fight the Timekeeper so many times where, like, now I can pretty consistently beat the Timekeeper, but it's just a speed bump on the way to trying to do this other, you know, this later boss and this later level.
Yeah.
So not super, super fun for me. And again, not an abject failure. I put a lot of hours into it, enjoyed a lot of my time with it. It just, it's also, this is a weird game as far as like being like a continuous, like rolling development.
Yeah.
Like there is, you know, people know the final stage that's going to unlock once you beat the Hand of the King. Like this game came out where it was saying like, this isn't done.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to keep adding stuff to this. And it's still going on, you know, quite this long after it.
Wait, so much so that like,
No. There's that DLC that's coming out still. And it's called like a DLC, but it's patching in a level that they initially like said was going to be the last level of the game.
Wow.
It just wasn't in the last level of the game.
Okay. Yeah. My understanding. So they put this out on early release on Steam and said, this is basically done. We just want to get the last level put together. Like everybody play this and it'll be fine. I thought that when it like, you know, reached 1.0 or whatever, when they pulled it out of early access, they had finished it.
Huh. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, finish doesn't mean anything.
But I mean, like, you know? put in that last level. But if there's still just a last level that we're waiting for, that's very strange.
This is the game that, like, really, like, blurs that line, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Between what is a finished game. Like, if you can continuously just kind of add things to a game and continuously add development to it, like, it makes a lot of sense for a game that is supposed to be kind of perpetual like this. You know, like a perpetual grind, like you want them to keep adding new content. If you're just kind of playing it and enjoying it, you probably are just very excited when they're going to add this new stuff.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah. You know, I want them to add these new things. As is like coming to it, it's like, I'm braced for people to tell us this because this is the reality of the show and stuff. But also, even if we weren't doing the show, just people just being like, oh, you have to come back now because they added this or they addressed this concern.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you had your chance, you know, like I put in the time when I had the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to just keep checking up on Dead Cells to see if it got closer to the game I want it to be.
Right. Because,
you know,
I don't know, like my concerns about this are kind of foundational to what the thing is. I don't know that a free patch is going to deal with that. Like if there was a Dead Cells 1.5 that said we have a campaign now, sign me up. Like,
well, and the custom mode is a step in the right direction for me, like that, you know, just being like, just let me choose my weapons rather than having to like, you know, re-roll until I get something okay.
Yeah,
you know, like just like let me just choose my stuff, like I unlocked it, but making it like hiding that behind beating the game is annoying to me. And just adding that is a little too late because I've already put in, you know, I get it too much. I don't feel like I'm getting learning things from it.
You've reached peak sales. Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Reach peak sales.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yep.
I don't know. Like do we want to talk about any of the particular biomes that we liked that we found interesting? Like mine's super boring. I like the promenade a lot. It's I know that's early, but
it's platformy.
Yeah, it's platformy. It's really spread out. It feels like it has a couple of different movements in it. Like you go through a few different phases of it, and I really like the scarecrows that superpower the enemies around them.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting. More interesting than like some of the other stages, which just kind of felt like here's some pits of water that will give you damage over time after a little bit.
The sewers are specifically like ambushes.
Yeah.
The sewers are based around that. So like enemies pop out of the ground and stuff. The promenade has the scarecrows. It has a little bit more. The promenade's the second level. I was thinking of the castle with the platforming.
Right.
There's one that's kind of basically the ramparts, which has kind of a platforming element to mm-hmm. it. There is the clock tower, which also has a key element. I forgot about that. Boy, do those kill the pace. the clock tower is like bisected.
Yeah.
Like there's two sets of levels with bridges that go between them, and you kind of have to navigate that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of verticality. And then the castle is something where you have to explore almost the whole thing. And there are a lot of there's like a B-side to it. Like you go into these rooms that are little sections on the other side. Same thing with the Stilted Village that has rooms go into.
Like you go inside houses and there are like the little stages inside.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of the gameplay gimmicks of the individual biomes. Mm-hmm. In each one, there's kind of, this is kind of a weird issue, is each level has maybe, I think, three enemies.
Mm-hmm.
In it, three or four, but it makes some of the longer levels really tedious. Like going through the castle, the individual enemies that are in the castle are all pretty fun
mm-hmm.
to fight, and they all have interesting, unique gimmicks to them. But you're going through this huge, huge level for a long time, and it's just, you know, here are these four dudes. Keep fighting them.
Yeah,
you know, keep. Here's a slightly different mix-up.
Well, yeah, and not. Problem with having so few enemies isn't just so much like, oh, but you put more effort into it or whatever. It is that you run short on different interesting ways for them to combine with particular pieces of geometry, right? It just reduces the number of cool things by a factor.
When it's random geometry and effectively random loadouts of enemies, like it's just a very limited brush. Like you're painting a picture with five colors.
Yeah.
You know, and there's only so many things you can paint with that, you know? So, I mean, that's kind of Dead Cells. It's fun. It's only tangentially related to Souls. It is a in between Sekiro thing, but Sekiro comes out soon. So mm-hmm. we can all put this Dead Cells behind us and never think about it again.
can I be positive for a moment?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
This game is beautiful.
Yeah. It does look good.
Yeah.
Like really great pixel art. Like, chunky pixels, like sorcery or something.
Yeah. Chunky pixels, really good animation. I like the music quite a bit. Mm-hmm. aesthetically, it is a big win. I like how each individual biome feels appreciably different or looks appreciably different. The really good color palette kind of action that they've got going on. That is not any, like, I think the look of the game is pretty much unassailable. It accomplishes what it wants to.
Yeah. I agree. And you, we can't like under... The people, I don't mean to dismiss the people who are into and or say that I'm not into that flow of like when you are just like dispatched in fools and like doing rolls and parries and like dropping a trap and then ducking down and doing a dive attack on a guy and stuff like that. Like that is phenomenally good. And that's why I wish it was surrounded by something that suits it a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, just imagining like going through encounters like that and making my way from one end of a level to another end of a level without it being just like full of dead ends and nonsense is just mm-hmm. like, give me that. Like, I want that so bad. Like whatever these dudes do next, if they decide to let's refine our kind of combat engine, our movement and stuff mm-hmm. like that, and put it in like a game, a non-roguelike game, like I will be there day one.
Yeah.
You know, I would love that.
They've shown that they can make a game that feels amazing. Right. And
yep.
You know, earlier you said that it's a reckon that you have that procedurally generated games that is kind of just, it's just more cost effective to do that than to have bespoke levels, right? Something else that I'm kind of wondering about, and the procedural generation is kind of part of it, I'm wondering if somehow people got it into their minds, or if investors are looking for something where the amount of time that people play a game is considered a key performance indicator, right? Mm-hmm. Like our goal isn't so much to sell a lot of copies of this game. Our goal isn't so much to like have people have a really good time with the time that they spend with it. Part of our goals, something that is going to define success for us on this project, is do we keep them coming back?
Yeah. Racking up hours.
Yeah.
The funny thing is like that's 1000% a thing, but not with this, because there's no like live service aspect to this.
Yeah.
Like, it, I bought this once, and it's just giving me free stuff.
So that's what feels strange about it. Like, it feels like, you know, if you consider the game an equation and you look at, like, okay, what are we solving for? It kind of seems like a lot of these decisions that they're making are solving for people, again, like you said, making this a perpetual game. Like, how can we get people to, like, just really, really invest themselves and say that Dead Cells is part of my everyday life? Like, Dead Cells, like, is lifestyle. Just the game that I play, right?
Yep, I play Dead Cells before bed.
Right.
Dead Cells. You know, and that's cool. Like, it, like, that is a, and I don't want to make it sound like we're, like, bemoaning these people being generous.
No,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, there's a generosity of spirit to that that is actually admirable. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, it doesn't serve the art in this case.
Yeah, it's at odds with,
you know,
the,
specifically that unlock loop.
Yeah, it feels like it undercuts the things that I fucking love about this game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 Which is the bummer part. Like, I'm glad it's not like a live service. Like, it's not Destiny,
right?
Or whatever. Like, I'm glad it is not trying to ping me with microtransactions. I'm glad that it's not, you know, charging me for these little bits. Like, you know, I don't have to spend, you know, $1 to unlock these weapons or whatever.
Yeah, but like every time you die, it's like watch an ad to keep a quarter of your souls.
Yeah, I'm glad it's not that. If this were on phone, that's what it would be.
Right. Right.
You know. Super glad it's not that. I just really want this engine in a game with a more satisfying unlock loop. Like, it's, I wonder what this game does to people who have that compulsory aspect to them. Like, if somebody just, like, loves filling out a checklist, like, what does this do to the Ubisoft gamer? You know, like, do you look at this big list of unlocks and you're just like, yes, I gotta fucking get it all, because it's asking a lot. And it's similar to Binding of Isaac in that respect, right? Like, mm-hmm. I get that aspect, you know, like, I understand the irony a little bit about this, and Binding of Isaac is not nearly as fun to move around, but it doesn't feel like runs can go a lot quicker in that game. It doesn't also, like, my verb set is more varied. Like, it's not different kinds of melee weapons. It's like wildly different verb sets.
Yeah.
There's more than four bosses. You know, there's a lot of differences that make that version of that unlock loop
mm-hmm.
feel fun, and this one not feel fun to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, that's Dead Cells. On to Sekiro.
Yeah.
Sekiro time.
Yep. Today. So, as of right now, we have not played the game yet. We do not really have a plan for this season. We need to have our first encounter with the enemy before we decide how to take it apart.
And we might not have, like, a bespoke plan
right.
for it. Like, it may not be a thing where, like, we know exactly, you know, what we're going to cover, like, whether we're going to combine areas, things like that. Like, we have to play it, and I want to take my time with it a little bit. Like, traditionally with mainline Souls games, we would get them, and I would play it over a weekend so we can plan things out. It was typically how I did things in the past. I don't want to do that with this game. I want to play it as long as it feels good mm-hmm. and then kind of get an idea and then start trickling out episodes.
Yes.
So the difference for that, like, will be that instead of having the first episode coming out when we've both beat the game,
mm-hmm.
which is typically how we've done it, the first episode of Sekiro might come out, or a second episode or third episode, when we have not seen the ending of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that there's going to be an aspect where, like, you can play along with us. Like, I don't know if there's going to be, like, the Anne Orlando moment until we get to Anne Orlando.
Right.
I don't think if we're going to have the no spoiler warning, because we just won't know the stuff mm-hmm. generally. So it's going to be a little bit different, I think.
Yeah.
Than previous Souls games.
So, yeah, please come along on the ride with us.
Yeah. It's a, it, you know, they keep saying it's not a Souls game. We're going to believe them. and not treat it as such.
Right.
So, come along with us. We'll see exactly what that looks like. We'll figure out exactly how long we're going to be covering it. And all that stuff. We're going to release, or have released, depending on the timeline. I can't remember what we agreed to, but either very shortly or before or after this, we'll release our first impressions episode, which will be a little bit of, like, laying out how we can imagine that.
Yeah.
Without actually going to the area. And then we'll do the traditional bonfire side chat tutorial area and base mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Episode, and then start either going area or multiple areas at a time, depending on what it supports, and start moving through the game.
Yes. That's the plan.
That's the plan. After Sekiro, who knows?
I don't.
yeah, we definitely got some options. One of the things I was thinking about is how thirsty I am for, like, the PS2 FromSoft RPGs.
Evergrace.
Like Evergrace and Eternal Ring. Yeah, I want to play those games.
Yeah, they're right there on my PS4. Point. It's super weird. Yeah,
Those sound cool to me.
Yep.
So that'd be a cool thing. But we also have, there's Death Gambit and stuff like that. Jeremy played that and said it was really good. And he thinks we'd like it. So
cool.
So until next time, I don't know a piece of pithy wisdom from Dead Cells. Because the character doesn't have dialogue.
Until next time, don't lose your head.
Don't lose your head. There we go.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.